We're back to the Neil Haley Show. And I mean, oh my gosh, when we talk history, my guest is going to really give us a historical lesson. I'm very lucky to have on the program today author Judith Mudd Kringelmans, author of Flowers for Brother Mudd. How are you, Judith? Thanks for stopping by.
I'm good. I'm great, Neil. Thanks for inviting me.
So tell me about a bit about your background before we talk, we get into the book. Tell me a little bit about it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I wrote a memoir, Flowers for Brother Mudd, about my origin story, my coming of age story. Why did I do that? Because I thought, well, you know, I've had a successful career as a diplomat and been around the world and in the diversity of the world. And I benefited so much from it. And I thought that people who feel marginalized or people who want to challenge all kinds from a lot of different groups, that they might be inspired by my story to try to do something different that also serves themselves as well as the country.
And I think that's powerful to write that book because of the times of what you went through. So explain some of the things in your memoir that will blow people away of what you've lived through.
Well, yes, I was born in the Jim Crow South in Louisville, Kentucky. And even though Kentucky is not deep South, Kentucky in many ways still holds on to a lot of those tropes of this pre-Civil War time. That gives you some kind of indication of just how much they took over the culture. So when slavery ended and 25, 30 years later, the black codes came in that were supposed to make us separate but equal. But we all know that we did not become separate and equal, even if anybody wanted that. And so growing up, I grew up in that kind of circumstance after World War II, where we were really in a corner, cut off from the rest of society. And I was saved by the fact that I belong to, at that time, a minority religion in my hometown of Louisville, which the Catholic Church, but which had segregated churches. There were two churches. And so I could develop my dreams in this very narrow space with these parents who had gone through the disrespect and the humiliation of separate but equal. As a child, when we integrated a neighborhood in Louisville, the Ku Klux Klan burnt a cross in our yard. 1954, September, just when the Supreme Court had ruled just after that. And so it was kind of like this sudden opening up of my eyes of what people were whispering about. I felt completely confused because being a devout Catholic, I felt like, why would anybody want to use the cross as a sign of hating us? And, you know, fortunately, I had parents who were very caring and tried to keep all of that away from us. And at the same time, I had neighbors who were very welcoming on both sides. Mm-hmm. And they were, of course, white. But so, you know, we were caught in this dynamic. And as I got older and discovered the story of the founding fathers, of which, of course, I had known for some time. But when I discovered that we were not considered a part of we the people,
right,
I was brokenhearted. I really was as a child. And had it not been for the love and the support and the encouragement of my community and my church, even though it was segregated. I don't think I would have made it out of there with my sanity, or would have been able to really good.
So, I mean, that's just terrible, just talking about specifically segregation. How were you ever, did you ever fear for your life during that time?
Well, no. I mean, you always stayed away. You kept your head down. You always felt there was a threat. After they brought the cross in our yard, we were afraid, because soon after, our dog was poisoned and died.
Oh, no.
The following spring. In the meantime, my brother would ride his bicycle on the sidewalk, the neighbors would forbid him. They would come out, wave their newspapers in front of his bicycle. And so my uncles had to take him to court, my father and my uncles, to get take the person who did this to court, to swear out a peace bond. I started thinking very much like, oh, we have to stay one at home. And so, yes, you were afraid in that sense. And we never went out. We stayed in groups. When we went out, it was together. When we would go through the public parks, we would get down on the floor. My father would tell us that this was a white park, and we're not allowed here. So we would get on the floor. Of course, as children, especially when I was very young, we thought this was fun. But the fear builds up in you, because you begin to understand that you're different. By the time you're a teenager, then you see there are not the same possibilities for you. Mm-hmm. And that's where I felt I was safe, because the Sisters of St. Ursula mm-hmm. felt like there's always room for someone who's smart. There's always room at the top. Oh, these were some educated, wonderful women, white women from that area of the country. But, you know, they took me away from that world. It was the world of learning, the world of excellence. So by the time I got to Baltimore and to Morgan State University, a historical Black college and university now, I was afraid of my shadow. From the time I left Louisville to the time I got to Baltimore, almost 24 hours on the train, I never once got up from my seat. That shows you just kind of how awkward and unprepared I was to be in the outer world. I had never mixed really with any large group of whites, except the girls at my school and the sisters, who, you know, we put them kind of in a separate category, the nuns, and they're Black and you know, that kind of thing. And so it was a very cloistered type of upbringing that did have its advantages, though, in the sense that you had to draw on yourself. You had to create your own dreams. I think many children and people are living like that today. You know, just trusting their own tribe, their own group, their own surroundings. I think that story of personal courage, of developing it through support and love, is one that people can take away from my story. By the time I got to Baltimore and I was in college, my eyes were always opened on new things that Blacks had been doing, that whites were doing. With Blacks, even though it was segregated and really considered a part of the South. But for me, it was like coming to the North. Isn't that crazy? I mean, I really...
That's so crazy.
Yeah. And so I was constantly learning and getting out of my little comfortable hole, you know, my little warm cavern. And I tell those... fun-loving events or strange events in my book. I developed, though, this desire to become a diplomat. And nobody knew what a foreign service officer was. which was an FSO, which I would say I'm going to be an FSO. And I learned about public diplomacy and public affairs, and that you could actually go out and talk about American culture. And so I said, I'm going to go to Georgetown and get an MS FS. And people would look at me like, what is she saying? Because it sounded.
Wow. So, I mean, you've really gone from a time where you had no rights at all to a time later that you really evolved as, and you want to teach people from this book. What is the ultimate goal from people reading your memoir?
Oh, the ultimate goal is that people feel inspired to use what they have to get more, to find courage, to trust in books, in history, in the stories of people that have gone before and their success, and people who've really accomplished in whatever field they feel attracted to, and not to give up. No one ever really encouraged me in that field. Nobody ever pointed me in that direction. But I knew if I learned a language, so I became serious about French. I became serious about participating in international events and won a Fulbright scholarship to go to India after I graduated. Yes, which really then tested my desire. Was I going to really make it abroad? Was this a dream or a reality? Well, you can imagine 2 years of living and teaching and studying in India. Then I came back and went for my master's degree and eventually joined the Foreign Service, but was very tempted to join the CIA. So,
oh my gosh. So the story, your story, could that story be a movie someday? Is that something you'd like to have?
Oh, I would love to see it happen. It was suggested by the good people at Ex Libris that it would make an interesting kind of a documentary. Although, of course, they'd have to go put a lot of money into it to go into the places. But maybe not so much today, if I could get a team together or someone could.
You should definitely consider a documentary. Where can people purchase your book and learn more about you?
Oh, yes. They can go online and get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Ex Libris. It's available at all the major book websites.
All right. Well, we appreciate you coming on. You have so many stories, but people need to go pick up the book today. Because trust me, to hear these stories, and when, you know, some people feel bad about their life and say, I was down, you are the story of going from rock bottom and the challenges of the times you're living in to success beyond belief in living in a life of purpose and driven and experience the galore that you dealt with. So I appreciate you coming by.
Yes. And if I may say, my new book, which is called Chocolates for Mary Julia, will be out in about a month. So
you're going to have to come back on again and talk about that for sure.
Yes, I would. I would love to. Thank you so much.
All right. You're listening and watching The Neil Haley Show, and we will be back in just a moment.